Don't look at the dying. You only encourage them. The homeless, the hungry, the hurting, they're not really there, and it's not polite to stare. You're driving your wallet on the rush hour freeway, so don't stop for empty pockets or slow down to look at accidents, or the boogeyman will get you. Pretty soon, the cops will clear them all away anyway, and your eyes will be safe. And when you're dying, oh, yes, you will, no one will look.
And that was Berkeley poet Julia Vinograd giving you a preview of her new book, Dead People Laughing, the poem, Don't Look at the Dying. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and my name is Robert Norris, and you're listening to the last of the Bathrobe Spears broadside shows. I've been promising to quit this show for the last three shows, and today is no exception. It's really hard to give up this show because so much information continues to come my way that I think is interesting, that I want to share with people. I actually promised I would give it up because I'm now publishing a paper, well, actually a newsletter, called the Street Shit Sheet. I'm on issue 155. I began the Street Shit Sheet in 1988, 154 issues ago. This issue is a dime, and I'm trying to get one out every week. We talk about the youth curfew, which is coming into an effect in early September, and about the case of a guy jacked up by folks on the boardwalk, by boardwalk rent-a-thugs, as I call them. If you want to get a copy of the Street Shit Sheet, you can give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is Headquarters for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and my phone. So give a call if you're interested in the Street Shit Sheet, or if you're interested in Street Spirit, which is a monthly newspaper that we distribute from San Francisco, which is much more professionally produced, longer, has a lot of good articles in it. The lead article this month is Presidio Housing Takeover, about the Homes Not Jails takeover of vacant housing at the San Francisco Presidio that really should be going to homeless people. It should be going to somebody anyway, and it's not going to anybody and is laid vacant. In fact, the city has been destroying much of that housing. In fact, we're going to begin this show with the continuation of an interview that we heard some of last week, or perhaps it was the week before, by Ted Gullickson. Ted is a very articulate, very active guy up in San Francisco who's a tenant activist, heads the San Francisco Tenants Union, and is also involved in Homes Not Jails. We reached him by phone a week or two ago after the housing takeover, and he talked to us, and here's some more of what he said.
Do you want to describe anything, what happened on Sunday when you were, I should say, on Saturday when this demonstration took place?
Yeah, well, we a number of people, about half the people who occupied the housing, went ahead of them. We had a march and rally at downtown San Francisco in the afternoon. Ramona Africa was one of the speakers, and we set up a car caravan and a bus caravan out to the Presidio. Some of the people who occupied went ahead of the march and rally and took control of the two houses and moved into them.
Now, did the police attempt to stop that when it was happening? I know when I was driving up there, I found lots of roads were blocked off. Were the police successful in stopping one of the building occupations?
No, the police were, they knew that something was going to be happening, and they blocked off many of the roads. They blocked off access to the Wherry housing, which they thought we would try to occupy, but anticipating that they would be blocking that off, we chose these other sites instead. So we were able to get into the housing, no problem. At some point, the police came and checked out this housing that we occupied after the people were already inside. But the people inside were squirreled away on the top floors, and the police, even though they checked the housing, they didn't realize that people were inside and simply left. So then when the march and rally came, people who were already inside hung out their banners, and about 20, 25 people who were with the march and rally then took over another unit of housing. And then following that, there was a speak out at the sites, and people both from inside the houses and people who were with the march and rally made many statements, and eventually the police felt they had enough resources there and moved in with about 50 cops or so and busted in the doors and arrested everyone inside.
What happened then?
Everyone was taken to a already set up area of the Presidio where people were fingerprinted and given citations for trespassing and demonstrating without a permit.
Now, was a permit required to protest at the Presidio? Is that
The Presidio has this strange thing where they've designated certain areas as what they call First Amendment areas.
And that was not one of those areas?
There's not too many of these so-called First Amendment areas, and they're generally in places that are inaccessible to...
Or irrelevant, huh?
If you want to get a permit to demonstrate at the Presidio, you have to do it in one of those areas. And so we didn't even try to get a permit because we didn't want to just do a demonstration in one of their parking lots somewhere. We wanted to demonstrate that this housing could be used to house.
Mm-hmm. So this is what, Homes Not Jail, second or third such occupation?
It's actually the fourth one at the Presidio.
When were the previous ones?
One in 93, 94, and 95.
And what were the results? Did anyone go to jail, or let's just say, was anyone sentenced to jail afterward at a trial? I know that it's...
I think it was the 95 one. The same charges, trespassing, demonstrating without a permit, resulted in a court trial in which Homes Not Jails and our attorneys used a necessity defense, arguing that the dangers of homelessness were severe enough that our breaking into these units and occupying them was justified. And the defense was pretty good. Unfortunately, at the Presidio, the charges they give people are infractions as opposed to misdemeanors. So we had no right to a jury trial, and we had to make this argument before a judge.
Actually, my understanding is that they're misdemeanors, but in a federal court, unless it exceeds 6 months and, I guess, $1,000 fine, something like that, you can still get tried before a judge.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. So we are before a judge as opposed to a jury, and when you have a necessity defense, it almost is necessary to be before a jury. As a judge is going to look at the technicalities of the law. And we put together a pretty good defense, and we had expert witnesses who testified very persuasively about the dangers of homelessness, about the unavailability of shelter beds on the night of the action.
Do we have a similar kind of testimony likely to be coming up for our defense?
That's what we would expect if we go ahead again to trial. It's a good form to continue to raise the same issues that we raised.
Now, what was the result? You were found guilty?
We're found guilty of trespassing and not guilty of demonstrating without a permit.
And was the result that anybody went to jail, or was it simply community service?
And hours of community service, which I personally then used to help religious witness with homeless people.
Plan the next occupation?
Those
religious witness indeed did an occupation, I guess, what, two months ago?
Yeah. They've done three or four themselves. There's been a lot of takeovers out of the Presidio, and at some point there, so far we've gotten the issue raised, and at some point they're going to have to start listening to us seriously.
When talking to other protesters up there, I learned that some of them, who don't look, shall we say, like your average person on the street who's, raggedy in clothing and so forth, are actually using Presidio housing themselves at other times. They're squatting there.
Yeah, we've been trying to get... good squats going there for a long time. I'm constantly sending people out there. We've never had one that has lasted very long, but we're continually spreading the word to people who are living on the streets that if they are looking for housing, there's plenty of it at the city.
Now, one of the tactics used by the protesters in this demonstration was to refuse to give their names or to show ID. Can you describe why that was done and what effect that had?
Well, the initial plan was to... Can we hold this for a second? The intent was to make sure that everyone get charged with the same charge, that certain people weren't highlighted and given additional charges, that sort of thing.
Was the intention also to clog the jails, or was that just...
That's always part of the strategy of any sort of jail solidarity strategy. And
I know that some people did get charged with a third charge, false information.
Yeah, the...
which means not giving the name, the proper name, or...
Eventually, the police police were generally giving the same charges to people, so eventually everyone cited out that night. And as I understand it, the last person to get out was at 2 o'clock in the morning. I guess you could say it was effective.
Were the buildings vandalized? Did you have any reports of that?
No. You know, all the buildings out there are vandalized at this point to some degree or another. And for example, the one that we went into was had some broken windows before we ever moved into it.
Although it looked in pretty good shape.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty nice place for people to be able to live, and the floors were a little warped, but otherwise looked pretty good. So this will be going to what, arraignment on August, is it 14th?
August 14th, right.
And have attorneys been secured for people, or are they expected to provide their own attorneys?
Well, we'll get some attorneys. We have, Homestead Jails has a regular corps of attorneys through the National Lawyers Guild who have represented us at all our previous court cases. Mm-hmm. Expect that they will do the same at this one, and we'll round up other additional attorneys through the National Lawyers Guild as we do.
What should supporters of this group do, or supporters of Homes Not Jails do? Any announcements about, like, I mean, August 14th, is that, what, 8:30 in the morning? Or?
Yeah. At this point, we're not organizing anything special for that. The initial arraignment is very informal. We may end up organizing something for it, but at this moment, we don't have anything organized.
That'll be at the Federal Building in San Francisco?
Right.
Do you know the address of that building?
455 Golden Gate.
That sounds like that's about it.
Golden Gate and between Polk and Larkin.
If people want more information about Homes Not Jails and what's going on with them, what should they do?
They can call the San Francisco Tenants Union, which provides support for Homes Not Jails. And our telephone number is 415-282-5525.
Well, listen, thank you, Ted Gullickson, for your patience in the midst of it. It's been a busy day. You've got incoming calls coming in and out, and I guess all the jailbirds will get together on the 14th and chatter.
And we all did show up on the 14th to appear in federal magistrate's court. Even though the crime is a misdemeanor, we had no option for a jury trial, and there were quite a few of us, I think 45 or 50 out of a total of 65 arrested. Only three pleaded out, and that was because one had to go back to a foreign country. I think it was Sardinia or Italy. And two others had other problems that didn't allow them to be present at the trial or throughout the negotiating process. We originally thought we had a deal with the federal prosecutor that would have allowed us to plead to an infraction and do 14 hours of community service, have no probation, have essentially nothing in our records really of any significance, and have everybody reduced to the same charges, except for one guy who kind of panicked and ran away, but his charges would not be any more significantly serious. He'd just do a few more hours of community service. But apparently the federal prosecutor was shooting for bigger game or hyped up, and she overruled the negotiations made by her assistant, which we had spent hours doing. As a consequence, we did not plead at all and set forward the process until, I guess it's Monday the 18th, and we're going to be, some of us will be pleading. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be down here working on stuff, and that'll be happening through a very vital and active attorney, Katya Komisarek, who's taking on a lot of cases pro bono. That means for free, and she's also she's an activist herself who spent a lot of time in jail for it, pounding on a nuclear weapon. I think she got part of a nuclear weapon dismantled down at Lompoc military base. She was quite a heroine to me in the mid-80s, and I was really impressed with her work as an attorney. She hasn't forgotten that she's first an activist and second an attorney, and that is such a rare thing. Even among attorneys who are very sympathetic or who are activists, there's usually this overlayer of kind of professionalism where they are part of a different caste, their time is more valuable than yours, they can't talk to you now, and so forth. This Katya was completely different when we went up to the Homes Not Jails arraignment. Police tried to seize and did seize my tape recorder in the hallways after they the technical word is assaulted a young woman who was a demonstrator because she had a camera and they wanted to seize that camera. I'm going to play you a little bit of that interaction. It took me all day to get back the tape recorder and even longer to get back the tape. And Katya Komisarek was there all the way, pushing to get that back and yet acting very diplomatic when that was required. Here's the situation in the federal building back in several days ago when we went in for the Homes Not Jails arraignment. It's just a flash, but it gives you some idea of what was going on, what people were saying, and the kind of consternation that was produced by the court security and federal marshals who were really annoyed to have these dozens of scruffy long hairs and lounging activists filling the corridors of their precious federal building, our federal building, I might say.
Having a small confrontation in the hallway here in the federal building, 15th floor.
She just wants to make sure that nothing's going to go wrong.
It's also human decency.
And if we just took it and took things a little more slowly, it wouldn't be so problematic.
No, well, we don't need a bunch of people crowding around this either.
Makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, it makes me a little nervous when I get somebody's crowding around.
You're the one who started.
Well, there are three people surrounding one woman, so that makes us a little bit nervous as well.
Yeah, we're all a lot bigger than she is.
So the issue is a camera, which the federal marshals are concerned about here in the 15th floor.
You can't take out the film? Why don't you just shoot the rest of the wall?
We can get it back as soon as
we can get the camera back. We're not going to do anything but leave it in the office.
Can I have a little...
Yeah, I'll give you something.
Give
me something.
And one of the workers here is filling out a receipt to give to the guilty, the vicious camera bearer.
Thank you.
Okay. And
where does it say no photos? I never saw
that. And
the sign on the wall says, notice, use of the following items on the court floors is prohibited. Cameras, tape recorders, and telephones. And of course, in using the I had broken a rule, and the court security seized the tape recorder, beginning a long process of trying to get it and the tape back. We ultimately had to get a court order from a judge to get the tape recorder back, and we were treated to probably a typical display of how federal personnel, including the marshals, treat ordinary citizens, particularly citizens who don't look too wealthy or too conventional. They were abusive. They refused to give their names. They jacked us around for 6 hours. I guess it's all pretty standard. And complaints will be going out in triplicate for whatever it's worth. But again, my hat's off to attorney and activist Katya Komisarek, who not only stood by us, but went the extra mile after that to be present during negotiations with the marshals, to present herself and insist that our rights be respected. And she did this, again, without seeking a penny for her services, even though she needs the money, as we all do these days. Currently, the case is going to trial. It looks like we're going to each of us be demanding a separate court-appointed lawyer, and some of us will be going with Katya. And the trials are not allowed to be jury trials. They'll be trials in front of a judge, but we will be able to cross-examine the officers, and since there are number of officers and other witnesses we can put on, as well as 45 to 60 of us that actually some of us may actually go all the way through, not just to trial, but go to jail and so forth, and make a big point of actually carrying this to the ultimate conclusion. It's going to take a lot of time and court energy, particularly with those court-appointed attorneys, and we're thinking that the threat of that will probably persuade authorities to be reasonable and return to the original deal that we kind of agreed to with the assistant federal prosecutor. But more on that as it happens. Palo Alto, California was one of the communities that passed an anti-homeless sit-lie law, as it's called, this spring, making it illegal for homeless people, actually for everybody, but it really only impacts homeless people, to sit down on the main street, which is University Avenue, except in a special ghettoized area off to the side, a plaza area. The law was passed by a so-called liberal city council over almost overwhelming opposition from more articulate people than I've ever heard speak at city council meetings before. And then there was a large demonstration of 150 to 200 people in late April who actually came and sat down protesting the law. There have been no further protests up in Palo Alto. The law is still in force, but according to the activists there, it's not being enforced. What is being enforced, however, are attacks on where homeless people live. Though they don't have a sleeping ban in Palo Alto like we have in Santa Cruz, they are due periodic sleeps of the riverbanks where people sleep. And here we're talking to several Palo Alto activists about that and what's happening with that.
We're up here at University and Bryant Streets, hanging out around the corner from Noah's Bagels with Larry Duncan, Elizabeth Ash, and a passel of folks. With us is Trouble Tracker Ann Turner from San Jose Community Homeless Alliance. And, of course, beggar backer Becky Johnson from Santa Cruz. Larry Duncan, he just handed me a number of reprints of articles from the Palo Alto Weekly concerning, dare I say it, harassment of the homeless in wooded areas. What's that all about?
It's the creek, and the encampment under the bridge primarily. July 14th, 13th, the Menlo Park police posted notices telling people that they had to be out within 2 weeks.
You're pulling out a sign, attention, Creek residents, property removal notice from the both Palo Alto and Menlo Park police departments. The areas in the San Francisquito Creek, including the El Camino Bridge, will be permanently cleared out of all personal items, including beds, clothes, food, etc., bodies. The creek is no longer available for camping and storage. It has been declared to have unsanitary and nuisance conditions, including human waste, trash, debris, lack of clean water, and other conditions that give this area a high potential for the transmission of diseases and periodically burden the stream with pollutants, which, of course, means that they're immediately putting in hot and cold running water and restrooms for the poor, right?
There was a restroom, but it's since been removed. It was used for when they were building the bike bridge. But the health department inspection that they used to state that there was debris and trash, etc., was about one single campsite adjacent to the bridge campsite. It was removed immediately after the inspection. That was 4 months before the notice was posted.
Now, how many people would you estimate live in this area who are without homes?
150 or so.
Without roofs, actually. 150. And how many people do you estimate are in Palo Alto generally who have no homes?
That's it, about 150.
And so they all pretty much live down there?
No, about... up and down the creek, in the creek area, there's about 50 people. So it's about a third of the people.
Now, the rest of that notice also says, I see, property, those without a place to live are referred to organizations that can provide help. Such as the Homeless Center on the grounds of the Veterans Administration Hospital. Does that help actually exist? Or?
The Clara Mateo shelter on the VA property is run by the Salvation Army, whose motto is blood and fire, not home sweet home.
I see. So it's not, should we say, too likely that homeless people would get assistance if they go there?
None of the people I know living near the creek, no. In or near the creek.
So what do they do if a homeless person shows up and says, hey, this is a notice sent me down to you. What's the response of the Salvation Army? Has anyone tried?
No one at the bridge campsite has tried that because they know it's futile. And beside that, I mean, it's like this is a correctional facility. It's not a shelter.
So they want you to sign on to Jesus, that sort of thing?
Random drug checks, etc. Yeah.
Let's continue looking at this notice that you have here. It's kind of a bright orange pink. And then largely at the bottom, it's large letters, it says property found in the creek.
on Wednesday, July 16th, 1997, and thereafter, meaning, of course, near the creek, will be discarded. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to call Officer Mark Lowry, the Menlo Park Police Department, or Officer Patty Stone at the Palo Alto Police Department. Did you call them up and ask if they wanted to put those folks up? Or?
Not yet.
Any more comments on this notice? I mean, did they, in fact, roll in and start ticketing and arresting people, or what happened?
No, I went to the opening of the Clara Mateo shelter because I was unfamiliar with the Menlo Park power structure. I ran into Officer Dominic Palusa, or Detective Palusa. The guy said people have to go away, and I kept asking him where, and he said he didn't care. Kitty Palmer of the Santa Clara Homelessness Task Force did come a couple of weeks ago, and people were saying that they didn't want to go to shelter, they wanted Section 8 housing, affordable housing. She said that even if she could get those certificates, she recommended they move to Modesto or Sacramento to secure their certificate. They have 120 days to do that.
What about Bora Bora, New Guinea?
She hadn't mentioned that yet.
Very idyllic area. Possibly the homeless could relocate there without undue congestion.
On the bright side, she did recommend that they could come back when the housing situation improves in the peninsula.
I see. So there is hope for a bright future.
Yes.
Now, Palo Alto was once a state of, well, it once had quite a demonstration last April when there was a candlelit brouhaha down on University Avenue, actually not too far from where we're sitting, concerning the sitting ban, which of course precludes what this guy is doing, fixing his bike here, although I guess he's right off the University Avenue. I'm not sure if he's criminal or not. But sitting down on University Avenue during what, a large swath of the day and much of the evening is technically illegal, isn't that right, Larry?
Correct.
Now, what's been happening? Has that been enforced by the gendarmes? What's the story?
Not at all. Not as.
So, cops walk by you as you sit down on the avenue?
Yeah. In fact, I'll deliberately sit on the ground when I see the cops going to Starbucks.
As a token of respect for the police officers.
Yeah.
Show them you mean no harm.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, in other words, actually, I spoke with... I'm not sure if it's the husband or companion of Faith Bell, the bookshop owner or worker or whatever, manager, who opposed the sitting ban at City Hall during the spring when it was discussed at some length, along with many, many other people, of course. And Bell is out of town, but this guy said that, in essence, the law no longer has any... It's acted sort of as a moral statement rather than a legal statement. It's not being used in any legal capacity.
Correct. It was symbolic more than anything.
But on the other hand, it appears that the cops are going to the heart of the situation by going after the people at their sleeping spots.
Yeah. Trying to sort through why all of this is happening. A lot of it has to do with the Sand Hill project that Stanford University wants to build, $1/3 billion project. And what that's done is it's fired up the neighborhood associations adjacent to the creek. And after they've gotten through talking about their number one priority, the traffic in their neighborhoods, et cetera, then they start talking about how frightened they are of people from the creek wandering through their neighborhood, scaring their dogs or whatever. Joe Baldwin with the Urban Ministry asked for detailed complaints from at least the North Palo Alto Neighborhood Association. Of the 97 complaints, 86 of them were appearance. They had nothing to do with any criminal behavior. And the 11 left over, they had to do with, I woke up in the morning, my newspaper was missing.
Aha! Well, it is very important to receive one's news in the early morning hours.
Or make it.
Yes. Anything you want to add for those who are either completely ignorant of the situation or ravenous for more details?
No, not at this point.
Thank you, Larry. Now, you're a longtime Palo Alto resident?
Yeah, about 4 decades.
And you sleep out?
Yes.
And why haven't you been arrested?
I've asked them to.
I see. Well, perhaps in the future we'll hear something from behind the iron bars. Hopefully. Margaret, what's happening here in Palo Alto?
Well, we're trying to deal with another sweep of the homeless. this time in the area between two cities in a creek bed.
Is this sort of a traditional yearly ritual, sort of like the gay Jewish, the exciting Jewish sports that, or I should say the Nazi annual attacks on the Jews, which caused such good humor in the German community in the 30s? Or?
Well, what typically happens in Palo Alto for the last decade or so in the creek is that just before the rain starts, the police go down and try to evict everyone living in the creek to get rid of their belongings so that they won't wash down the creek. But this appears to be something different. This time they claim that they won't be allowed to come back, that there'll be regular patrols in the creek to keep them from returning.
And this is not what they say in other years?
Or? No. And we've known for several years that they've been, the two police forces between these two cities, Palo Alto and Menlo Park, have been working on permanently removing people from the creek. They've admitted to that themselves. So with the opening of a 45-bed shelter in Menlo Park, they've now decided to go ahead with this effort to keep people out of the creek. Right after this Clara Mateo shelter is what they call it in Menlo Park, between the two counties.
Does it have any open beds, or are they all filled?
They're not all filled, but 7 of the 8 people from Palo Alto who applied to the shelter were turned down when they did have beds.
What were the reasons?
The reasons were that they weren't in a program that qualified them. Apparently, there's a lot of restrictions on who can be in the shelter and what kinds of programs they have. And
in the past, some kind of stuff like that.
Yeah, probably.
Somewhere. So in other words, the existence of a shelter is now being used as a pretext for destroying the makeshift homes of 50 people.
Of 15 people.
15 people.
Yes.
So
are 15 people under the bridge, others camped along the creek. The exact numbers, I don't know.
Can you drink for
you? No, thanks, I've got.
When you're done, I'd like to speak with you.
Sure.
And how is the homeless community here in Palo Alto responding to this latest pogrom?
Unfortunately, the homeless community in Palo Alto is the same as the homeless community everywhere. They're pretty disorganized, and they don't have a lot of resources. They're not really aware of all the mechanizations that are going on and how to address the problems that are being created.
City Council in Palo Alto, are they appealing to the good faith, good sense, and good riddance? Appealing to the hearts and minds of the city, or the hearts, at least the hearts, that appealing to the pocketbooks of the City Council? Are they going to the City Council and speaking to them, saying, get off our backs, send those cops somewhere else, come on, give us a break?
Well, as you know, we just not very long ago finished with trying to stop the city from passing a sit-lie ordinance, which we failed to do. This came right on the heels of that, and no, we're not organized. Most of us don't have a lot of time to do these
right.
things.
I'm not critical of you for that. I'm just wondering
if the
occasional voice is raised.
We intend to go to both city council meetings of both cities, the next city council meetings that come up, and appeal to them to be a little kinder and gentler.
Perhaps a little less transparently rapacious in their attempt to remove people from places where they've been living and provide no alternate space.
Right, yeah.
Anything you want to add that you think might be of interest to folks in the Santa Cruz area? Don't come to Palo Alto with your sleeping bag?
Well, it's all right with me if you come to Palo Alto with your sleeping bag. But I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find a place to put it.
Where do folks generally kind of get together here in Grow Without Homes? Is there like a cafe where folks hang out?
Well, this corner, the corner of University and Bryant, is if there's a congregating place for homeless people in the city, this is it, other than the drop-in center. In the mornings, there's a drop-in center run by a coalition of churches that the homeless go to meet at. And then in the afternoons, they scatter mostly, but some meet at this corner or pass through sometime during the day. And
any word from those jovial students of SHAC, Stanford Homelessness Action Coalition?
Yes, the jovial students of SHAC are working on this. I'm part of that group, although I'm not a student. We're going to be writing a guest editorial for the newspapers. We're going to the city council meetings. We're going to try and contact the state, this SamTrans and some other people we think might be involved with this and at least
respond in some way.
Respond, yes.
Excellent. Is there any way any people can get in touch with you if they wish to support you? Or the group you work with? Give us a call at 423-4833 if you're in the Santa Cruz area. That's the Huff headquarters, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Or if you happen to be in Palo Alto, wander on by corner of Bryant University and look for an old geezer with a blue shirt and a woman with red toenail polish.
It is immoral to make already unhoused people homeless.
To DJ Ketamine from Boston. I'm a former homeless person, and I'd like to encourage the homeless people of California to take aggressive action such as the people have in England, because in England you're not considered homeless, you're considered living an alternative lifestyle. What they do there is take over complete city blocks and demand action and attention. If the people in California did this instead of trying to reason with the governor and going to all these town hall meetings, they might see more results.
So have you actually been a part of any of these kinds of occupations or just watched them from afar?
It depends. In Boston, I was a part of many occupations, which is completely different because you have to deal with winter there, and if it's cold, you can freeze to death overnight. I don't think people out here have to face that fear, which is completely different from the situation that I was in. But I think if through positive work, and you can accomplish anything that you want to accomplish.
How long have you been out here?
I've been in California for 4 years.
And have you you've been involved in any similar occupations here?
No, I haven't.
Would you join those occupations if they were happening?
If I thought that the people had their shit together, yes.
Because recently there was occupation of Wary Housing in the Presidio up in San Francisco by a group called Homes Not Jails. You may have heard about that.
I haven't heard of that, and I'm glad to see that they're starting to do it in this country because I think it gets the most results.
Well, thanks a lot, and check out the Street Spirit and the Street Shit Sheet. Tell me what you think of it, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you very much for your time. Have a nice day.
And you're still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the lingering remains of a two-hour show. This day it'll be an hour and a half that we have broadcast every, well, most recently every Sunday at 11 o'clock. You're invited, of course, to call in with your reactions to the show, which, even if it does not continue, we will hope to broadcast through print media your comments in the Street Shit Sheet, which is a homeless newsletter that will be coming out, we hope, pretty much weekly. Actually, we've done this at least 1 week running, and we're hoping to continue our good record around this issue. So give a call to 423-4833 if you have anything you comes up, that has come up, that you think should be coming up as a consequence of any of the issues we are raising on this show. If you have objections, if you have other views, hey, people deserve to hear them. People deserve to be able to read about them. So give a call, 423-4833. Palo Alto isn't the only place that's having problems, of course, and isn't the only place with a homeless movement that's responding to police repression. San Jose has a group called the Community Homeless Alliance, which meets every Tuesday at 11 o'clock at First Christian Church, 80 South 5th Street, for those of you who are interested in San Jose. And this Tuesday, they're not only going to be meeting at 11, actually it's going to be on the 19th, they're not only meeting at 11, they are going to be walking, having a what they call a spiritual walk. They're going to be asking the community to join them in demanding that police sweeps of the homeless stop, that a safe place to sleep be established, and more important, that affordable housing be opened up to homeless people. This has always been the focus of the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance. Here in Santa Cruz, much of my focus with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has been civil rights for poor people and for homeless people, and opposition to police abuse, opposition to laws that make homelessness criminal in public spaces, such as the sleeping ban, the sitting ban, laws making it illegal to lie down or stand up on public property, such as, for example, the Tom Scribner statue, where people traditionally do stand to speak and address crowds. It's now become sacrosanct, and people have actually been convicted for sitting on it, even though people regularly from businesses sit on it and eat their lunches there without being molested by the armed police officers who seem to so fastidiously go after poor people and homeless people, which of course is their function downtown, as far as the merchants are concerned, to remove the unsightly and the unprofitable from public view and make this as much as possible a kind of MTV Dreamland-like Disneyland joint where you spend your bucks and you go home. It's a hard thing to say and a harsh thing to say, but I speak based on the actions of merchants who otherwise seem commendable in their self-presentation and their friendliness and their accessibility. Cat and Canary, for instance, is a store that, my friend Travelin' Tom Noddy, who's he's the bubble man, used to be the puppet man. He helped organize the street performers' guidelines back in the early 80s in order to circumvent city council regulation and restrictions on street performers. And he's always been concerned about rights of poor people and homeless people, and particularly performers. He has had a very positive view of the owners, particularly Julie Hendy of Cat and Canary. And a lot of these folks are very positive in how they present themselves, and I got a very positive view when I talked to her. You may recall last week I did an interview with Julie Hendy about the issue of Ricky Prim and whether this black man suffered racial discrimination at the store when he was arrested for returning an item that they decided was stolen but was not, clearly not, because he had the receipt. And they admitted they made a mistake, and they wanted to resolve it all, though they didn't want to pay him anything for the false arrest, and the issue is still outstanding. But anyway, Julie impressed me as a fine person, an accessible person, so did her partner, and yet these are the same people from the same store from whom homeless people have gotten lots of grief because of whose complaints, perhaps added to the complaints of the El Centro residential area right above the Cat and Canary benches were literally torn out and relocated in order to divert young and countercultural people from in front of Cat and Canary. So it's really strange that public personas of people can really clash with how they act in terms of public policy, and it's really an interesting contradiction. It's really judge merchants and those who represent them by their actions. So, for instance, the controversy raised by the merchants' Real Change, Not Spare Change yellow card hoax program, as I call it, whereby members of the public, downtown residents, visitors were encouraged to pick up little yellow slips to kind of toss at homeless people instead of money when they were asked for spare change. The slips had phone numbers allegedly for services that they could use that would help them meet the needs that the change would supposedly go to meet. We found, of course, the numbers led to services that were full or inapplicable, and that it was essentially a publicity gimmick to help drive away the poor from downtown, and really to convince people that it's okay to harden your hearts because all kinds of services which don't exist do exist. We try to bring this to the attention of Janaea Kelly, the lawyer, who is kind of spearheading this effort, and to Linda Steinau, the head of the Downtown Association. And they apparently reassured negotiator and activist David Silva of the Green Party, who talked at length with Janaea Kelly several times, and reassured that David that, oh, they were going to change any mistakes in the cards, and they were going to make sure that homeless people were not just told to spend money to make phone calls to answering machines to services that were full, but they were also offering Downtown Association also told David Silva that they would be opening up a phone for homeless people to use to call these numbers to see if there actually was space available. This wasn't just some sort of front fig leaf or PR number, and that hasn't happened. And instead, we still see these little cards available in some of the shops. We still see the sign, real change, not spare change, when they're not really talking about change at all. The only change they want is the absence of poor and homeless people from the downtown area. The absence, specifically, of panhandlers. And I guess Silva has been renegotiating or recontacted Kelly, and Kelly told Silva that people had better appreciate this real change, not spare change program, or else a harsher repression is going to follow. They're going to press for other alternatives. But if people protest the idea of publicizing and glorifying selfishness and stinginess, as this does, people call the merchants to task for putting out phony numbers and not taking responsibility for what they're doing, then the merchants are going to respond with more punitive measures, presumably more security, police. Maybe they'll do what San Francisco on Haight Street has done, where you see no trespassing signs up and down the area. Again, this attempt to privatize public spaces is quite outrageous and actually probably illegal or unconstitutional, in that public walkways are meant for everybody, and you cannot turn them into a private mall or promenade, much as you want to, unless you want to actually privatize the whole area. And this, of course, was done to some extent by the Neil Coonerty Bookshop Santa Cruz owner and former city council member's law in 1994, which made street cafes private-ish type areas so that they can lay their furniture debris all over the sidewalk and charge people for sitting there and drive away people who are not paying at those places, even though it's on public property. And not only that, but drive away people who are sitting on the sidewalk or, let's say, performing a musical instrument there, and even drive away people who are circulating petitions. I mean, it's quite amazing and quite outrageous. But that is the Neil Coonerty Kennedy Law, also voted by Rotkin, also voted by our great liberal Catherine Byers. Celia Scott wasn't on the council in 1994, but she hasn't introduced any measure to reverse it. So we must assume that there's a council, if not unanimously agreed, at least not too interested in making any changes in the current business status quo. An incident happened in Berkeley that I'd like to describe for you, and actually I may have some of it on tape. It had to do with a rather befuddled and cantankerous street guy who was sitting at the Cafe Mid, which is a long-time cafe, been there for 20 or 30 years more, probably, on Telegraph Avenue, four blocks from University of California at Berkeley, which is sort of the student strip, and also a lot of different communities of people, homeless people, merchants. Actually, Berkeley has a system of rotating street merchants, where you have really one of the largest street merchant scenes in California. It happens every day, and it's quite usual to see the entire sidewalk taken up with a lot of street merchants. Anyway, this fellow was sitting at the Cafe Med, and there were complaints that he should move on because he hadn't paid anything. He hadn't bought anything. And he explained, and the police eventually came and handcuffed him and took him away. His crime was, of course, sitting down at this chair at the outside area on the sidewalk, a chair indeed owned by the Mediterranean Cafe, but on public property, on the sidewalk. And he was rousted, taken away, and actually the people around there, other than myself, visiting activist beggar-backer Becky Johnson, and local activist Cornerstone Carol Denny of the People's Park Defense Committee, plus attorney David Beauvais, or Bedrock Beauvais as I call him, we all watched this, and we were upset about what was going on, but local other homeless people and other customers thought it was just fine because the guy, even though he wasn't, you know, being abusive or loud or anything, hadn't paid his what they saw it as his fair share. And then I learned that they wouldn't serve the guy because of allegedly an obscene comment he'd made earlier in the day to a female patron. And I was kind of at a loss as to how to view this until I heard the argument very well put from attorney Beauvais, who said, look, these are public spaces, and we may not like how people act in terms of their verbal speech, but as long as they're not being abusive or threatening, as long as they're not battering or assaulting us, we all have to be here, and we have to, you know, show a certain fundamental tolerance, particularly in these times when there are more and more poor people. He actually didn't say all of this, but this is some of the message that came across to me. And he said further that, you know, the city is, this is city property, and you're telling people that they cannot even be there unless they're willing to pay a toll, pay a fee, pay a ransom to the restaurant in question. And that kind of struck home to me. And it's true in Santa Cruz, increasingly true, as you see all the buildings being built up and all the barren fences in front of empty lots going. It makes for a nice look to the city, but what that means is that now the sit law, which makes it illegal to sit within 10 feet from any store window, goes into effect everywhere up and down the mall. And it provides for less and less places for people to publicly congregate, for people to be, and more excuses for police to harass poor people. What does that harassment feel like? Well, let's return to Berkeley and the case of this fellow sitting at the Mediterranean Cafe. Here's a bit of how he got it.
They want you to move on your own accord. I understand that you're refusing to leave. They're going to sign a citizen's arrest.
Who is?
These people inside here who gave us a call.
What is a citizen's
arrest? You don't know what a citizen's arrest
is? No, I don't.
Under California law, a private person has the right to arrest another person for violation.
What was the nature of the arrest?
Sir, what I want you to do is to stand up, please.
Is that an order?
Yes, I'm commanding you to stand up right now, sir. You're under arrest. Stand up, please.
Sir, for the first time,
I'm going to ask you very politely. Stand up, please.
Yes.
Do me a favor. Keep your hands out of your pocket and turn around for me, please.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Put your hands behind your back, please.
But do you give me my rights? You're sort of touching my body. Is that my right that you can do that?
He has a right hand, but...
I'm resisting arrest.
What's my bike now? Sir, do you have anything sharp in your pockets? Any weapons? Anything
I
there?
Think
I
have a nail clipper. A nail clipper that I had tucked between under the nails.
And where is this nail clipper?
In the right pocket.
Right pocket. Your pants pocket, sir.
Yeah, right pants.
Okay. Can you do me a favor and spread your feet, please?
Yes.
If you will you step this way?
It's funny how you don't even know when you break the law. Means there's too many laws.
And he's being taken away. So admittedly, the officer did spend 5 minutes trying to get him to move. He didn't want to move. I mean, people inside the cafe wanted him to move. He wasn't buying anything. He was sitting there. So
yeah, you got to talk to the owners of the cafe.
Yeah.
It's not the cops, you know. Yeah. New ownership.
new ownership and new order. Actually, it's pretty much an old order, but who knows? Again, I don't think that police should be permitted to remove people from areas in front of the cafe. If the cafe wants to put out chairs on the sidewalk, it does so at its own risk. There is the argument, and it still has a persuasive feel that the cafe has to have some way of getting people to move on, even though the area is a public area, because otherwise why should they put those chairs out at all? Why would they be involved? It could be, you know, city seating, but certainly the private sector would not want to do that unless they were making something off of it. Do you have any thoughts on this? I want to register your views as to whether whether and how businesses should be able to do this in public spaces. Should a cafe be able to move people along, privatize the sidewalk? Should cities allow them to put out such chairs at all? Should people have special rights on the sidewalk, even sitting on private property, sitting on the chairs and at the tables of cafes? Give me a call at 423-4833. 423-4833 for your view on this issue. Back in Santa Cruz, you don't have to be sitting on someone's private property. You can be sitting on public property. You can be leaning on public property and face a citation, face harassment, face fine, and potential jail. That's what happened to two women, employees of Pizza My Heart, at 1 o'clock in the morning a couple of nights ago. Listen up.
It's 12:55 at Cathcart and Pacific area, in front of the Acapulco restaurant. And we have several police officers. The inevitable Officer Eveleth.
Thank you for videotaping.
Stopping three younger people. Hi, folks.
Yeah. On their way home from work for leaning against
a water fountain.
And he's going to write her a citation.
Really? So, are you a part of this or just watching?
I'm watching. I'm going to probably go to court.
Right. Well, this looks like a major crime, as usual.
Yes.
What's the actual... What is it?
Yeah.
You're running around?
I'll explain to you since I'm away.
So, how long have you been watching this?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah, describe what you've seen.
This young lady just arrived on the scene and was leaning against the fountain. Yeah, and the cop came by and said, don't sit on the fountain. And the other lady got off work and came out and was like, hey, what's going on? And came down and sat on the fountain. And right as she sat on the fountain, like, this girl leaned against it, and the cop pulled up. And he came out just all, rah, rah, I'm a cop. And I got to hassle you for sitting against that. And from my vantage point, 2 feet away, she wasn't sitting on it. She was leaning against it. The other girl may have been sitting on it. But, no, she's helping us out. That girl in the red sweater was like, she sat down, but she hadn't been, you know, warned about it. She was in work. So she came out and sat down. And he's like really writing her a citation for sitting and stuff.
Well, this officer has a reputation for doing this. He writes these tickets and they get thrown out in court.
And just waste taxpayers' money.
Right.
Not tonight.
But the object is to, I don't know, to satisfy his own rather strange sense of obsessive ticketing or to drive people off the mall. We're not sure which.
Me?
And 3 weeks they're going to be doing curfew stops on people because of this.
I'm not because I sat on it.
What's your name, criminal sitter?
My name is Leah.
Last name, Leah?
Skurto.
How do you spell that?
S-C-U-R-T-O.
Well, Leah, hang in there.
I will, man.
Yeah, this stuff shouldn't be. So were you out here for this? I mean...
No, we just passed by.
No, man, dude, I'm here in
water fountain. It's gonna break.
Come on. Serve this public.
Is that
that looks like a suitable fountain. It looks like it's designed.
So you got a phone number you can be reached at.
That's what I thought.
Who's listening to the tape?
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Actually, give me the phone number off tape, and I'll call you up. Hang on. Watch this episode where two police cars, count them, are parked here at 1 o'clock in the morning down near the Del Mar Theater, stopping two young women who are, one of them employed at Acapulco, the other one attempting to go home, for the purpose of giving them a ticket for leaning against or sitting on a drinking fountain structure that obviously is in no way damaged by anything they're doing. Has a flat surface where it's easy to sit, and they're bothering no one at this time of night. Why Officer Mark Eveleth is engaging in this kind of behavior, only his superiors know for sure, and probably even they are uncertain.
Ma'am, I can't get a
drink. What's your name again? First name?
Leah Skirto.
And Leah, give us the story. What happened here?
All right, I was sitting on this thing, and he drove by and said, "These do not sit on that." And then he...
What is this?
He drove around the circle, and I was leaning on it like this, and he said I was, and then she sat on the edge of it right as he pulled back up, and he came and gave me a ticket.
So, just because you wouldn't do what he said?
Well, no.
Why are you so disobedient?
No, dude, I did do what he said. I wasn't sitting on it. I was leaning on it the second time.
That's a good defense,
by
the way.
But he told me leaning is like lying, and you can't lie on it either.
No, that's not true.
That's kind of like
actually,
lying.
There is a law that makes it illegal to stand, sit, or lie on public property, but leaning is not illegal because...
Well, he told me leaning was like lying. So
right, no, that's not accurate. Because see the little pickets over there that separate the fence, those stakes along the wall there? There was a fellow about a month ago who was given a ticket for leaning against one of those. The judge came out to the sidewalk, found that even if he had been leaning, that was not illegal because it was not covered by the statute. Not that any of it should be. There's nothing wrong with sitting on this thing. And what we do need is we need about 100 people sitting up and down the mall so they can give everybody tickets and we can show them what's really going on here. Anyway.
He's leaning.
Well, let me give you...
Keith is so, like...
You women work... You three all work here at Pizza My Heart.
I want to lean so fucking bad, dude.
Here, just don't, whatever you do, don't lean. It's a killer.
I gotta stand, okay?
You know, it's public property. You know, we can't sit down on the ground. It's not our ground.
I know.
It's their ground.
Fucking
it. It should be common ground. But anyway, so you were coming to pick her up?
She works in the Capitola store. I work here. I'm the supervisor, so everyone was waiting out front.
Pizza My Heart.
Right, and everyone's waiting out front, so I can set the alarm and come lock the door. So I lock the door, I come out, I lean, maybe I sat, I don't know, against the water fountain, and Leah, who just got off work to come get me, started giving me a back massage. And that's when the police came up and rudely interrupted my massage.
I know.
And then gave her a ticket.
Well, obviously they were stopping a criminal form of sexual behavior here on the mall.
Yes,
you both should be ashamed of yourself.
Lewd and indecent exposures.
Right.
I
don't know what to say.
Warned, but dude, I seriously was not. Was I sitting on it the time he came back? I was not sitting on it. I was just leaning on it.
She was leaning.
I was leaning.
What in God's name am I working to pay taxes to pay their?
I know.
When they're giving us tickets for whatever.
Police harassment in downtown Santa Cruz doesn't simply extend to the nighttime hours. Here's some tales that I picked up from the mall the next day. Judge for yourself. See what you think. All right, it's 3:20 here in front of Logos Bookstore. I'm talking to...
Tandy.
And Tandy, you have a tale of amusement for us here at the... What about the... Some
anonymous.
New... You're anomalous, yes. Go ahead, anomalous.
Okay. At the liquor store, they now have 20-year-old rent-a-cops up there surveying the door, only letting two people in at a time.
And what's the reason for this? Is it any ideas?
Stealing, maybe.
And what liquor store are we talking about? The place up on...
Across the street from Taco Bell and the end of Pacific.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been streetwise or wise on the streets or out here?
In Santa Cruz?
Yes.
Remember they wouldn't let us eat our burritos, too?
What, oh, yeah.
What's this?
She can tell that.
Tell us about the burrito incident.
We bought some burritos and from the burrito place right across from the liquor store. The big
Taco Bell?
No, the burrito place right next to the liquor store. They give you big...
Taqueria.
The big old super burritos. And we sat down in front of there to eat them, and the two rent-a-cops wouldn't let us sit there and eat them.
What did they say to you?
The guy in the liquor store owns it, and they're renting from there, and he told them to keep us out. Or no, actually kick us in. They made us go inside to eat.
So you weren't allowed to sit in front of his store or in front of the taqueria?
In front of the taqueria.
Because they're renting from the guy who owns the liquor store.
So in other words, the very cafe where you bought the tacos would not allow you to sit down in front of it to eat them?
Yeah.
No. We had to go inside. We couldn't sit outside.
Did they insist you wash your hands before you began to eat?
No, but I'm surprised they didn't.
What about your hairdo? Did they suggest a change of hairdo?
No. They just made us go inside. But it sucks because you buy something from a store and you can't even sit outside and eat it.
Your first name is?
Amanda.
We're all listening to that, everybody. All right, then. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Later on.
Thank you for caring, man.
All right. We have another story coming up from Anomalous here.
Well, I don't know if it's really called police harassment because you're not really supposed to sleep in the parks or the forest around here.
But tell us.
But we were parked up on 9, a little ways up in the Redwoods last night, and we went camping, you know, just having a nice campfire, and we had a guitar and just chilling. And like in the morning, the cops came over. Actually, they were being pretty nice this time, though. They came over and asked us if we stay the night, and we were like, no. You know, and of course not. We've just been here since 2 o'clock this morning. And they were pretty nice about it. They said that we could get a ticket if we stayed there again, though.
And have you...
They were reasonable.
Yeah. Were these police officers or rangers, sheriff's deputies?
It was a 5-0.
Okay. And where do you usually sleep? If you don't sleep, do you sleep outside, I assume?
Either outside or at someone's house. Mostly outside. When I'm in Santa Cruz on the beach.
You get hassled on the beach?
Nope.
Because you're well concealed or because there's a tolerant policy?
I just think I'm lucky. I don't think it's a tolerant policy. I just think they never see me.
Do you sleep alone or in groups?
Sometimes alone. Mostly alone.
And as a single woman, do you have any trouble with that?
Nope.
Is that because you're trained in the arts of jiu-jitsu with your 48 Magnum?
I can defend
47
myself.
Magnum? 43 Magnum?
I can defend myself.
And have you been forced to do that while in Santa Cruz?
Never in Santa Cruz.
Really? You attributed this to the fact that you have good social skills with people, or is Santa Cruz a more peaceful place, or what's the story?
Well, I think it's just like everywhere, you know. It's a city. There's going to have your ups and downs of people, different levels of heads. I don't know. I've mostly been pretty safe here.
Where are you from?
East Coast.
And it's different than the East Coast?
Sure.
In the East Coast, you
city-wise, it's kind of the same, you know? It's totally the same.
How are the attitudes toward travelers, counterculture people, homeless people here?
They're cool.
Don't go to 7-Elevens.
Don't go to 7-Eleven.
And why do you say that?
That's true, because they kick us off their property every time we go there.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean
even if we buy stuff.
And
we're letting our dogs, like, use the bathroom or something outside of the building.
I see. So they frown on dogs peeing on the 7-Eleven property?
Well, we don't let them pee on the 7-Eleven property. We, like, take them out, like, in the grass next to the place or something.
Oh, but they're just paranoid about dogs?
I think they're just paranoid about us. They don't like our hair or something.
It's your hair, obviously. It has to be changed immediately. I like your hair, but that's me. Thank you.
Thank you.
James.
And James, you say you were here. We're actually at Cathcart and Pacific across from the food court. It's about 3:30 on August 16th, Saturday. And here's a fellow removing his bike and taking it off from a bike rack. But you said you saw someone actually getting a ticket for sitting on a bike rack?
Yeah, well, he was sitting there and the cop came up and was like writing him a ticket. So he was complaining about it. And then next thing you know, they're like searching him and arresting him. And they said that they were putting him in a drunk tank, but he wasn't like intoxicated beyond like compare.
What time of day was it?
It was the middle of the day.
Like, about 3 or 4 days ago?
Yeah, probably about 3 or 4 days ago.
Did it seem to you like that he was being...
He wasn't being like belligerent or anything. He was just like saying this.
The police were harassing him, you think?
Yeah, totally.
They searched him. They searched him without even telling him what he was being charged for.
Yeah.
How many police officers were involved?
Two.
Did you recognize them as seeing them around here? Or?
Yeah, they're here all the time.
Officer Eveleth, by any chance, tall fellow?
I don't know who that is.
We're always trying to keep tabs on Officer Eveleth. He's such an eager officer. Eager Eveleth, we call him. Anything else you want to add?
No.
Thank you, James. So we had a word with Gremlin. Hey, Gremlin, what's the name of your puppy?
Chardonnay.
Chardonnay. Cool. So Gremlin and his puppy, Chardonnay. And he says that as a black man, he's been stopped on the mall. He was told... He says he was actually told to get off the mall. Now, whether that was because he had a small puppy with him or whether it was independent of that context wasn't clear, but it certainly didn't sound friendly. Your name, sir?
Colby.
And what did you see?
I saw this cop, two cops come up on bikes to this kid that was just chilling on the bench. And they came up and they just started asking him, like, all these questions, like, where'd you just go now? Like, it's any of his business anyway. And then, next thing I know, homie's in cuffs, sitting on the curb, and I haven't heard any rights read or nothing like that. Not even a hint of it.
How many people were cuffed?
Just one, just the kid they were harassing.
And how many policemen were involved?
Two. And then another one came to pick him up. But it's like, kid didn't hurt anybody in any way, shape, or form. There was that whole scene was just unnecessary.
When was this?
Just the other day, man.
Like yesterday or the day before?
Day before.
And this was, what, near the bench where we're standing, which is right across from the Del Mar Theater?
Actually, it was like right up over there.
Up, you're pointing up to Cathcart and Pacific.
Just a couple benches.
Near Logos, maybe, or perhaps a bit beyond.
I don't know, man. The way I look at it, no victim, no crime, you know? And, like, I don't harm anybody in any way, shape, or form. And I'm not out here to steal from anybody, but yet I feel like I gotta watch my back for these cops that run around trying to get you for stupid shit that catches up to you later on down the line. Like, worthless things, man. Like, no crime, you know? And yet there's these people that are out here running around with guns and, like, stealing shit and, like, hurting people. And they're worried about me playing the guitar on the planter or whatever, you know?
Has this happened to you? Have you been given a problem for doing that?
I've been told that I can't sit there, and I moved, you know, but I don't know. It's just intimidating for these guys to be walking around with guns. I don't know who they are, but they can just come up to my world like they know me or something, you know? It ain't right. I don't like it.
Thank you.
But what can I do about it, you know?
What you're doing. Talking about it, for one thing.
Cool, man.
Sharing it with other people.
What's your name?
I'm Robert.
Cool, man. It's nice to meet you.
Hey, pleasure.
Should get some kids with video cameras out here sometimes and just be like, I'm observing the public safety services.
Sure. She has a video camera, and I think there was a group called Cop Watch that was trying to do that. If you're interested, you should give a call to... I'll give you a flyer. You can
have this, too.
I'm into keeping my eye out now, but I'm busting out to Colorado probably soon. But like, things need to be changed all over, you know? Like, the cop situation isn't just messed up here. I've been going around this summer just traveling around, and I find that most of the towns that I've been to are a lot the same but different than this one, you know?
Where have you been this summer?
Colorado, Oregon, mostly just the West Coast, Northwest. Not around Oregon, Washington.
How does Santa Cruz compare?
It's just the same but different. But it's like, I don't know, same but different.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides, Sundays at 11 with Bathrop's Pier, Robert Norse, that's me, and interviews from the past few weeks at political events and down on the mall, covering civil rights for poor people in Santa Cruz and around the California area. Now let's slip back to Julia Vinograd to hear another one of her unpublished poems. Julia Vinograd, brilliant Berkeley poet of the streets.
People slipped through the cracks. I talked to a man who wasn't there.
Well, that's not exactly fair, he said. The cold still gets me, and I only go invisible when the cops come, and I can't keep it up for long. It's like holding your breath to hold light away from your skin. You just have to know how. But I'm not like those imaginary people crazies are always losing arguments with, at least not yet. He sounded a little wistful. Would you like that, I asked. Don't know, he shrugged. It'd be easier. I always have to check the back of my knees. I keep leaving them behind. Not fingerprints, they were easy. He held up his hand and the line spun for me like a child's whirligig in the wind. Imaginary people don't get cold, but they're stuck with their crazies. I suppose I'll just go on like this till I'm hit by a truck that didn't see me. He laughed, the sound low in his throat, like a beaten dog afraid to come close enough to a fire. I wondered how old he'd been before, and how many other people weren't there. No, it isn't fair.
Nice.
Okay, this is called the go-away wind. An unpeopling wind blows, and those that touch shudder and blur till there's no one left but a smudge blocking the sidewalk with theoretical fingerprints. An uncounting wind blows one, two, three, down and out, don't count anymore. A sudden wind blows birth certificates whirling into a spring rainstorm, chased by barking dogs till the soggy ink runs like black tears of the unborn. No such person. We don't see spirit changers' ghost hands any more than we see our own ghost noses. An undead, many-headed wind blows everyone off welfare because safety nets are bad for self-esteem, and self-esteem ingrains coffins and triplicate. I phoned the Constitution, and the phone was off the hook. Busy, 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 nobody home. But I can't make righteous noises. I'm afraid of my own face stiffening in the go-away wind. The monster under the bed lives in the mirror. If everyone thrown off welfare winds up spare changing in the street, I'll break my neck trying to look away. The best I can say for myself is I'll probably fail. I can't change the wail of that go-away wind, that downsizing wind going down on the dead. But I won't pretend it's a nice day. A cold wind rises where there's only so much, and anyone with a food stamp or a rag doll must have stolen it. Maybe for me. We're clutching at everything to keep off that wind, but it doesn't work. Big wind blowing away. Who were they when they had names?
That's Julia Vinograd, whose latest book is Cannibal Carnival, and whose forthcoming book, Dead People Laughing, will soon be available on the streets. She usually sells it herself up on Telegraph Avenue, sitting in the Mediterranean Cafe or out on the sidewalk, from which you heard that earlier interview. If you want to get copies of any of her 43 books, and she's written a lot of them, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll put you in touch with her up north in Berkeley. You can also often find her stuff in bookshops, though I don't know if local bookshops are carrying Julia's stuff. They should be. You can go in and ask them. That's Julia Vinograd, V-I-N-O-G-R-A-D, also known as the Bubble Lady of Berkeley, for walking around and blowing big bubbles at crucial times. In terms of updates here in Santa Cruz, not a lot going on that I'm aware of, except briefly Crossroads' Chris Brozda, who some of our listeners may know as the rather intemperate activist, who has been jailed repeatedly over the last few months, perhaps justified in some cases, certainly not in others. In one case, he was pepper sprayed for riding his bicycle the wrong way, or making actually a left turn the wrong way, and being pursued by Officer Richardson, who caught him in the vestibule of the Golden West restaurant at 1 or 2 in the morning. And you heard the tape of that pepper spraying on this radio station when he called me up and was pepper sprayed on the phone for not giving the officer due attention. Strange. Anyway, he pled out to several charges. He's now at liberty and has been rather low profile. Crossroads Chris, or Crosswires Chris, as I call him when he goes off the deep end, and he has occasionally become, I think he gets abusive on different occasions. But he also is a very articulate and intelligent individual who has written and spoken extensively on homeless issues. One of his particular concerns has been the community house boondoggle, which is a $2 million 40-person transitional housing trailer project supervised and masterminded by the Citizens Committee for the Hopeless, a group that has been fundraising on behalf of the homeless, which runs the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, not a bad program, and not enough, and not just not enough, but really kind of a pathetic fig leaf at the moment. It has 28 spaces in the summer. Anyway, RASDA always was coming before City Council demanding to know what was going on with this project. The project has still has gotten nowhere in terms of any kind of real facilities for homeless people. They're supposed to put down 10 trailers next to the Homeless Community Resource Center area out at River and Highway 1, and that area is still vacant, fenced off. It used to be an area where people could use as a campground, and did for 2 years. Now there is no campground, there are no trailers there. They've got essentially $2 million in construction costs, and I guess that's going to be first-year rentals coming down the pike, and it's going to be a transitional program that only very screened people can get into, and a rather restrictive program that's going to be supposedly no drugs, no alcohol, no visitors. It's kind of a strange situation with the new fashion for transitional programs rather than emergency programs. That's how you can get money from the feds and from the state, by showing you're not just throwing money at ridiculous things like helping people survive in an emergency, but you're supposedly transitioning them back into mainstream society. What it really is, of course, is jobs for middle-class bureaucrats for these pretty-sounding programs that in some cases work and in some cases don't, but meanwhile the great majority of people go begging for shelter and find themselves running afoul of anti-homeless laws like our city's sleeping ban. And apropos of the sleeping ban, there is a new group that is formed that is trying to put an initiative on the 1998 general election ballot in November that would overturn parts of the sleeping ban. Actually, the sleeping ban itself, that's a part of the camping ban, the city's anti-homeless law around sleeping outside. One section says you can't sleep after 11 anywhere outside except in a fenced-in side yard or a backyard. That section, which criminalizes sleeping itself, would be, at least in, that's what they seem to be discussing, they haven't finally finalized the wording, that section would be struck. A second section on covering up with blankets or bedding would be struck, saying you can indeed wrap a blanket around yourself after 11 without being worried about whether you're going to be arrested by the police. That may sound like some kind of weird joke, folks, but it's not. It's not always enforced, but it certainly is enforced at political protests, particularly political protests against the sleeping ban itself. Those sections are going to be up for grabs, according to the circulators of this initiative. If you want to join in this initiative, you should give a call to Becky Johnson, who is originating this project and managing it. I'm kind of skeptical about it, actually, since I've always felt that there's not that much political support in Santa Cruz among the voters and not that much organizational support among the activists to get this kind of thing done, but who knows? I'd love to be proved wrong. Anyway, her number, if you want to help her with this effort, is 429-8529, and her group, the Sleep Band Busters, or whatever they call themselves, meets every Tuesday at 12:30 at her house. So if you're interested in kind of jumping on board this, get down and give her a call at 429-8529, or show up at her house at 1019 North Branciforte Street in Santa Cruz. That's three blocks off of water. Tuesday at 12:30, that's 12:30 in the afternoon, folks. You show up in the morning, you might fall asleep, and then Becky would have to have you arrested, a law-abiding citizen that she is. Also, on the front pages of last week's Street Shit Sheet, which you can still get through giving me a call at 423-HUFF, is the Balderos case. Mad Mike the Wonder Dog is still in jail awaiting trial on charges of trashing City Hall. Now, I'm getting some interesting flack for my reporting on this. Mad Mike himself is worried that publicizing his case will result in the prosecution getting meaner and nastier, or perhaps in vital evidence being revealed to the prosecution. We're trying to be very careful about this and not say anything that hasn't already been put out or that we haven't gotten from independent sources. We're not, you know, revealing information in his police reports and so forth. But his case, I think, is an important one, not just for him alone, but for all of us. The police seized this black activist 2 or 3 days after City Hall was trashed on the say-so of Kitten Reynolds, who I used to call Spittin' Kitten, and I now call Cop's Claw Kitten, because she seems to be a perfect tool for the police to use to discredit homeless activists and, in the process, lock up Mad Mike, as he humorously calls himself. He's being accused of vandalism, burglary, and arson for the City Hall break-in. And the main evidence against him, as revealed in the preliminary hearing, I'm not revealing any secrets here, is the testimony of Katrina Kitten Reynolds, who we found out a week ago and we confirmed a couple of days ago is being held by federal authorities in Las Cruces, New Mexico, on charges of giving a false report to federal authorities about a truck of explosives going to Albuquerque, and also possession of methamphetamine for use and or sale. This is the reliable witness that Santa Cruz police have used to hold a man in jail for 6 weeks. This is the reliable witness that that Miguel Balderas' public defender has not challenged in court. This is the reliable witness that prosecutor Ellen Campos has used as justification for keeping Miguel Balderas behind bars. This is a disgrace. Now, I don't know whether Balderas broke into City Hall or not. He certainly hasn't told me he has. But from the evidence that's been presented, they don't have shit. And what they're doing here is they are covering their asses because a break-in happened not 100 yards from the police department, and they have egg on their faces, and they are embarrassed. And it's also a convenient way of blaming homeless activists who did a 7.5-month protest outside City Hall, a peaceful protest, I might add, that was responded to by inappropriate force by both city council members and by the police department itself. And they are trying to smear this homeless movement, which is now trying to get something on the ballot, with these bogus charges against Balderas. It's interesting that the main antagonist to the vigil, and the one who proposed to shut it down with all kinds of draconian injunctions, who had a directive that a sign be carried off, which criticized him, that's former mayor and city council member, currently Mike Rotkin, or Riot Act Rotkin, as I call him, actually spoke up defending the vigilers, saying that he recalled an incident where last year a window was found open at City Hall, and the vigilers, even though they could have broken in, they could have stole things, they could have trashed things, and they were plenty mad at the city, did nothing of the kind. Instead, they called the authorities and told them to close it. This is the same vigil that the city locked out of the restrooms and then accused of pissing on the lawn. It's quite something. Anyway, there's a man in jail who's probably going to be angry with me for even mentioning this issue on the air, but I think it's one that we should all be publicly concerned with. And he's there because of the same kind of anti-homeless bigotry that is behind the sleeping ban, in my view, and certainly the same kind of prosecutorial abuse that's being used daily to overcharge and send to jail people for victimless drug war crimes. The Community Action Board and Paul Brindell, who occasionally helps people get emergency shelter vouchers from hotels when they have medical emergencies, is trying to document the need for an expanded summer interfaith satellite shelter program. As you may know, there are less than 30 spaces for more than 750 homeless people in Santa Cruz. Although, of course, many of them would choose not to use a shelter program, they are all subject to the anti-homeless sleeping ban. And certainly there should be places for people who want to escape from that ban, and there aren't for at least 9 months of the year, and probably for the whole year, unless the governor turns around and reopens the armory. And, of course, there are reasons that a number of people don't use the armory, which we've discussed on this program and we'll discuss as we go into the fall and winter months, if it's opened again. Anyway, if you want to help in this process of expanding potential emergency shelter with the Summer Interface Satellite Shelter Program, it may end up being the fall and the winter program, give a call to the following number, 457-9754, extension 555. That's 457-9754, extension 555. And tell them if you have given up on looking for emergency shelter in Santa Cruz and why. Have you been turned away from a shelter program because it was full or for some other reason? Did you choose risking a ticket by camping or staying in your vehicle rather than trying to use a shelter? Leave a message to that effect. This will give him more ammunition to push the city on that issue. The city is now claiming that, oh, well, we don't have enough shelter, but at least in the winter, anybody who wants to go into the armory can do it, which, of course, isn't true for a number of reasons, but it certainly isn't true during the spring, summer, and fall. And that's about it for the August 17th, 1997 edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. You have indeed been listening to that program, which comes on every Sunday at 11. If you have comments, give a call to 423-4833. Gosh, I'm saying every Sunday at 11, and every Sunday at 11 the last few weeks I've been saying this is the end of the road for this show. You know, I kind of hope it is, because as I said, I can't do everything, and the street shit sheet I'm putting out, which I recommend you read, is much more compact and useful, I think, than a show which gets out to probably very few people. But if you've been enjoying the show and you want to see it continue, give me a call and let me know about it. And do listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. They've got lots of good shows, lots of dedicated people, and they need lots of help, as usual. Call them if you got a studio space for them. They could use it. We could all use it. Thanks again.